First of all, I'd really like to thank the IDP for organizing this conference. I'm really happy to be here again. And the full title is Accuracy Thresholds, Can We Beat the 10 to the minus 4 bound? And this is ongoing work with Daniel Gottesman, and it's really in a stage of ongoing work. So we get new ideas daily. So I'm going to just give you the current up-to-date state of this. Okay, so let me start with a brief history of the accuracy threshold. Okay, so at the early days, about a decade ago, when quantum algorithms started to appear, we had this beautiful sequence of results culminating in Shor's algorithm in 94. And then everybody started to shout, what about errors? And then Shor came to rescue and showed that errors can also be corrected. And the sequence of results regarding quantum error corrections were published. And about half a year later, Shor came up with basically a proof that not only that error-correcting codes can be exist, but also quantum computation in the presence of noise can be performed. And Shor basically assumed that the error rate, which I'll denote by eta, the error rate per gate decays with the number of gates in the circuit. And immediately after, or not immediately, but a few months after that, a bunch of people, which usually, I know that many people have difficulty in citing this sequence of this huge bunch of papers. So here's a shorthand for citing the threshold result. If this is the only useful thing that you come up with from this talk, then this is good already. So, and this threshold result says this. It says that if the error rate per gate is less than a certain constant number, then quantum computation can be performed for as long as we want. And this is by itself quite a I think it was quite a surprising result. And now the topic of my talk is this number. Let's look at the graph of how this number evolves. And unfortunately, this graph does not look so nice. So it started, this is eta, and this is here. And it started raising above the zero at somewhere 95, 96, with Shor's result, 1 over log to the 4n. And then this bunch of papers showed that basically the threshold is at least 10 to the minus 6. And since then, there have been approximations of this number, which were more optimistic. They were around 10 to the minus 4, but no proof for that. Until the result that we've heard about 2 days ago from John Preskill, that showed that this 10 to the minus 4 actually holds with a different way of correcting errors, of achieving this fault tolerant result, which is using toric codes. All these results, the early generation of the threshold result, used a method called concatenated codes. So let's have an overview of this concatenated method. Okay, so how does the concatenation method look like? You start with a qubit, or a gate, and you basically encode it by an error correcting code. So if you zoom in into this qubit or into this gate, you see something which is not the logical gate, but actually the gate encoded on an error correcting code, and where the encoded operation is performed by, say, many more gates. And if you zoom in into each gate of these gates, you see again an encoded circuit. And the idea is that once you have some improvement in the error rate, which you can deal with, when you move from the first circuit to the second one level encoded circuit, then if you repeat this again and again and again, you get a hierarchical structure, and the error rate, the effective error rate that you can deal with, improves until it gets 1 over polynomial, which is what you want. Okay, so going back to this graph, the question is, can we use this concatenated method to break this line and sort of make it go to some reasonable place where we can actually do quantum computation in the lab? And the main observation that I want to convey in this talk is that basically there is an implicit assumption that we have been making in trying to look at the limits of the concatenated result. Of the threshold result in using the concatenated method. And this implicit assumption is that in calculating the threshold, these circuits better be as small as possible. So the main observation, which is a trivial observation, but apparently it seems that it's going to be very helpful, is that it might be very beneficial to use large codes, even for one step of the concatenated method. And that's due to the very simple fact that larger codes can correct more errors. And once your expected number of errors is below the number of errors that you can correct, the probability for an effective error drops exponentially if the code is large, versus polynomially if the code is small. So this very trivial observation is going to be a theme in this talk, and we're going to see how it's going to help. Okay, so this is basically the goal of my talk. What I want to ask is, what is the limit, what is the real limit of the concatenation method? We used to think that it's about 10 to the minus 4, no proof of that. Because looking at the sizes of the fault-tolerant circuits, these look like the numbers that you get. And what I'm going to show is that putting together basically all high-tech fault-tolerant structures that there are in the market, you can, plus this new observation, this simple observation, you can get, first of all, a pretty simple derivation of the 10 to the minus 4. But more importantly, I want to argue that basically, this is going to show that the actual limit of the concatenated method is not 10 to the minus 4, but it's actually much, much better. So a very optimistic estimation is 1 over 200. Now, I'm not saying that we can achieve that. We can't yet. But I'm just saying that, in principle, this is the limit of the threshold of the concatenated method. So basically, my motto here is I'm going to give you a recipe, And I hope that you take this recipe, go home, take your favorite error correcting code, plug it into this recipe, and see if you can improve the threshold. And I'm saying that there is no fundamental reason why it cannot go to this number. Okay, so having said this, let's start from scratch. How to correct errors? Let me give you a short crash course about how to correct errors. So one of the basic observations about correcting errors is it's quantized. Okay, so one of the basic observations about correcting errors was that it's enough to correct Pauli matrices, because these are a basis for all one-qubit operations. And one other very helpful observation was that phase flips, these Zs, transform to bit flips by the Fourier transform. And therefore, this brought up the invention of CSS codes, which are codes that are constructed according to the following recipe. You encode a qubit or a state of a qubit by a superposition over words of some classical code. And you use this classical code to correct bit flips. And then you transform by the Fourier transform to a different basis. And hopefully you get a superposition over words of some other code, classical code, in which you can correct bit flips again. But this means that you're correcting bit flips in the Fourier transform basis, meaning you're correcting phase flips in the original basis. So you're correcting phase flips and bit flips, meaning you've corrected everything. OK, so now, in order to take the observation of working with large codes further, I want to be able to correct errors not only over the field F2, but also over the field FP. And luckily, the entire theory just goes exactly, flows exactly like it was for qubits, where the X's and Z's are defined now over fields, over the field FP. So the X, or a generalized bit flip, is just addition in the field of some number. And the Z, a phase flip, is a multiplication of the computational basis, the state in the field, by some phase omega t to this number. Omega t is the pth root of unity. And just as it is the case for the qubit case, bit flips move to phase flips by the Fourier transform, where the Fourier transform is this. So again, we get the recipe for CSS codes, which is correct for bit flips, apply a Fourier transform, and then correct for phase flips. OK, so here is a very nice class of codes, which is a special case of CSS codes, but it has very nice properties. And these are called the polynomial codes. These codes were introduced in 96, and they've been used in other areas, for example, in quantum cryptography, how to share a quantum secret, because they have nice properties. So what are they? OK, so the code is this. You encode alpha by a superposition over all evaluations of all polynomials of degree less than d on x, m different points in the field. So you start by picking m different points in a large field, and you evaluate all polynomials at these m different points. And you require that these polynomials at zero are equal to alpha. So basically, the picture can be viewed like this. These are all polynomials, The code is the evaluations at this point, and alpha is the encoded bit, or actually pit. Okay, and the nice thing about this code is that if you look at it in the Fourier transform basis, so if you apply Fourier transform on each coordinate, this state goes to a superposition of words in another polynomial code. In a polynomial code of the degree m minus d minus 1, where m is the number of points in the field and d is the degree of the polynomials. So we should think of d, the degree, as smaller than the number of points. So why do these codes correct for errors? Because polynomials are sort of identified by d plus, if they're of degree d, they are identified by d plus 1 points. So the other points are sort of just redundant information, so we can correct for them. Okay. So this means that these are CSS codes, because we can correct for bit flips, and then we move the Fourier transform basis, we get another polynomial code of the co-degree, we can correct for bit flips there. So this is the first ingredient to construct fault tolerance scheme. And now what do we need other than that? We need a set of universal set of fault tolerant gates. And one of the nicest things about polynomial codes is that basically all gates can be applied bitwise. Unlike the if you know the construction of the first fault tolerant result by Shor, there is this menacing circuit for constructing the Toffoli gate. There's nothing like that here. All gates can be applied bitwise, except for some small correction, which I'll tell you in a second. Okay, so what do I mean by all gates? First of all, the Fourier transform. So the Fourier transform I've showed you before, if you apply it pit by pit, then what you get is another polynomial code, and actually what you get is exactly the Fourier transform gate. So what you get is exactly a superposition over omega to the alpha beta of the encoded version of beta. The same thing happens with C naught. The best way to look to see that you can apply a gate bit by bit is by just applying, for example, addition bitwise. So if you look at this polynomial and you add to it, say, 1 coordinate-wise, then of course all the polynomial is just raised by 1, so this means that the encoded bit, the encoded f of 0, is going to be raised by 1. So if you have applied an encoded addition on the encoded bit. And this way, you can do it for all these gates. Okay, so this holds also for the Toffoli gate. So the generalized Toffoli gate for the field FP is alpha beta gamma goes to alpha beta gamma plus alpha times beta. And how would we do it bitwise or coordinate wise on the encoded state? We would just take 3 such states, so 3 blocks of m pits, and you would apply this gate on the first coordinate of each block, then on the second coordinate on each block, and so on. And what you'll get is, well, if you take a polynomial and you apply it and you multiply it with another polynomial coordinate-wise, you get the evaluations of the product of the polynomials. So you get exactly a polynomial in which the value of 0 is the desired value. Except that when you apply 2 polynomials, the degree is increased. So that's a problem, because then we were out of the code, right? So to deal with that, we use the motto that we've learned from many people. Actually, this is an observation by Debbie Luang and Shi Chao, right? And Ike Chuang. And so many people have taught this, but I think what Neil said summarizes this very nicely. He says, never hesitate to use teleportation. So we use teleportation. So what we need is, we've managed to do all the gates bitwise, except for the fact that the degree of the code increased from D to D prime. In order to decrease the degree, again, we use teleportation. And basically, that's a simpler circuit than teleportation, but it's the same idea. If you start from this state and you want to teleport, and you wanted to reduce the degree of this code without affecting its content, you teleport it to a state of in which, to an encoded state in a higher degree polynomial code, and what you end up is a state which encodes alpha in a higher degree polynomial. This is actually a way to increase the degree, but if you do it in the Fourier transform basis, this decreases the degree. So, and that's it. That's a set of fault-tolerant heats that you need. Okay, so this is the second ingredient that one needs for the concatenated method. And the third ingredient is, of course, error correction. And again, we turn to the pile of tricks that accumulated in the various fault-tolerant results. And the best way that we know of to do error correction is Steen's method. And Steen's method to do error correction is very simple. This is the data state. And what you want to do is you want to correct a few errors in this data. So you take a state which is in a superposition of all encoded states in the code. And you simply control not from this guy to this guy. So if there is no error at all, then this just adds to this state a string from the code. Which means, but since the code is a linear subspace, it doesn't move anything, it doesn't do anything. So if we measure the state, we don't see anything. We don't see any error. But if there was an error here, then it will show up when we measure this state. So what we do is we just see not from the from this state to this state, measure this state, and then error correct using the information. Okay. Once we do that once we do that for correcting bit flips, we can apply a Fourier transform to rotate this state to a different to the Fourier transform basis, and then we apply another correction exactly using the same method. Okay. And now the last thing that we need for the last ingredient is this. Basically, in all these schemes, we used encoded states. Now we need a way to generate encoded states which are reliable. So how do we generate encoded states? We use an Ancilla factory. So we use some factory which is going to operate on the side. And what it does is first of all, it starts by generating S0, by encoding S0 from scratch, without attempting to be fault-tolerant, just attempting to apply the smallest circuit possible. So how would you do that? basically, in order to generate a zero, you note that one way to do it is, first of all, randomly guess the first d plus 1 values of the polynomial, and then interpolate to the other coordinates. What does it mean, interpolate? Interpolate means just for any polynomial of degree d plus 1, of degree d, if you know its first values over d plus 1 coordinates, then there is a linear transformation that gives you its value on the other coordinates. And this is given by these coefficients, which are called the interpolation coefficients. So you just apply this circuit. And this requires about d squared gates. However, this is, of course, a circuit that is very likely to fail. So what you do is, again, use another trick, which is purify. What does it mean to purify? We have a few ancillas, which are presumably very bad. I mean, just very few of them are going to be reliable. So what we do is we take two of them and we compare them. What does it mean to compare? We apply C0 from the first one to the second one and measure the second one. If we see no error in the second one, this is quite a good indication that the first one is okay. If we see an error, we throw them away and start from scratch. Now, if we don't see an error, then this means that we have a good chance that there is no error in the bit basis, in the x basis, but maybe there's an error in the z basis. So we use two states that survive this purification process for the x basis to compare in order to verify that there's no error in the z basis. And the state that has survived these two comparisons is likely to be better than the first state. And then we can repeat this process again and again, and this gives you a state with high reliability. And basically, that's all we need. Okay, so let's see how we put this together to get a threshold. So, I think Hans Bregel yesterday, or the day before that, came to me and said, where does this number come from? Where is this 10 to the minus 6 or 10 to the minus 4? Where does it come from? How do you actually see it from all the constructions of the fault tolerance? So here is how you see it. How to calculate a threshold. Okay, so what is this picture? This is, suppose we started with one gate, and we've encoded it using some code. Here I've used the 7-qubit code, or a 7-register code, an M-register code. And on each of those, we apply a bit flip error correction, a phase flip error correction, and then the encoded gate, say the Toffoli gate. What will be the error probability, the effective error probability of the new circuit? It will be basically the probability that in all this picture, there is too many errors. There is, in each block, there is more than the number of errors that we can correct. If we can correct t errors, the effective error rate is to see here, is the probability to see here more than t errors. So basically the threshold comes from a combinatorial calculation, which is to look at this circuit and to calculate what's the probability for more than t errors. Okay, so first of all, the first step is to calculate what's the probability, what is the number of qubits that affect one qubit at the end, say that qubit, the rightmost qubit. Okay, so first of all, the number of qubits that affect it are the qubits from the purification of the ancilla. So for in each error correction here, we use an ancilla which was purified. And this ancilla was purified using four ancillas, right? Or actually three gates. So this qubit is affected by these three gates in this ancilla. And so for each ancilla, we have three qubits that affected it. Plus, we have to multiply this by a factor of three because this qubit is affected by all the qubits that affect its neighbors in the Toffoli gate. So an error in an ancilla that affected this qubit can propagate to this qubit via the gate. So counting these things up, we have 37, or approximately this number, that affect one qubit at the end. So basically, the probability for one cube for an error is 37 times the error probability per gate times eta. Now, what will give me the threshold? The threshold will be derived by asking that the probability that the number of errors in a block is larger than t, this probability should be smaller than eta. This means that the effective error rate will be smaller than the original error rate, and so we can concatenate. Okay, so basically, the scheme that I showed you works for any risk, for any fault tolerant. So not only for the polynomial codes, I didn't use in this picture that I've showed you before, that I've showed you about the calculation of the threshold, this picture, I haven't used anything about the polynomial code yet. So basically what I've shown you with a running example of the polynomial codes is an abstract recipe for fault tolerant, for cooking up threshold results. And what's the abstract recipe? Let me just go through the ingredients again before we go on with the threshold calculation. The abstract recipe is take a quantum error correcting code, apply fault tolerant gates bitwise, so coordinate-wise, transversally, that is, each qubit only talks with its neighbors. The first qubit only talks with the first qubit in the second block, the first qubit in the third block, etc. Plus an ancilla, which we used, for example, for the degree reduction, but sometimes you use ancillas for the Toffoli gate. It doesn't really matter. So some construction of fault-tolerant way of applying a universal set of gates. A way to do error correction using Steen method, and creating reliable ancillas using purification. And the cooking instructions for the threshold result is just concatenate this using encoded states and calculate the threshold using the previous scheme. So let's go back to the picture of calculating the threshold and see what can actually affect the threshold. I wish I had here two projectors to have this picture in mind. So look at this picture, photograph it for a second. And then let's discuss what will affect this error probability when we use different types of codes. Okay, so if we take, for example, the 7-qubit code, ignore this for a second. If we take, for example, the 7-qubit code and we plug it in to the combinatorial formula that we had before, the probability for more than two errors, more than one error to occur in a block, well, we have 37 eta probability for an error in a gate or for a qubit, and the probability, the effective error rate, which is the probability for more than one qubit for a block, is about the ways to choose two places in the 7-qubit in the block, times 37 eta squared. And calculating this, you get 3 times 10 to the minus 5, which is very bad, or which is not as good as we want. Now, the observation is that if we plug this threshold formula to large codes, so make m go to infinity, then basically the error rate is the effective error rate will be determined by the expected number of errors. So if the expected number of errors is less than t, since the probability to get much more than the expected number of errors drops exponentially for large m, the actual threshold is just going to be determined by the expected number of errors. And the expected number of errors is 37 eta times m. So if we require that this is smaller than t, we get the critical eta, which is 1 over 37 times t over m, the number of errors that the code can correct. And this number, note that this is a very small number. I mean, it can get, for example, for polynomial codes, it can get to 1 over 4. It is 1 over 4. So this gives you something like 1 over 160, right? And this is too good to be true. So what are the problems? Where have I been cheating? There are basically two problems here. One is that the ancilla purification, this factory of creating ancilla bits, doesn't work if the encoding circuit actually is too big, because the first encoding circuit does not use any error correction at all. So basically, we try it, and if we get some good reliability, then the purification will work. But the purification will work only if there is some error probability for the state to be reliable. So too large n will make the ancilla purification fail. But more importantly is that polynomial codes, the codes which we used, indeed t over m for them behaves like 1 over 4. The number of errors that they can correct is 25%. But this is true as long as we take f, the size of the field, to be very large. If you want, actually this should be m, not n. If you want m to be very large, we need the size of the field to be very large, because we need to evaluate the polynomial on distinct values of the field. So if f is going to be very large, this means that instead of using qubits as particles, we're going to use particles with hundreds of states, which is not a very good assumption. So we need to solve this problem. And the solution for the problem is this. Okay, there is one, of course, trivial solution, which is basically look at a large field and encode each state in it by many qubits, and just replace a gate on a large field by many gates on qubits. But this is too expensive. Instead, we use here a trick where we recall that fields actually exist not only for primes. I mean, we don't need to use FPs. We can also use fields which are prime powers. And fields of prime powers actually have very nice structure. They have a structure of vector fields. So if we take an element in the field of 2 to the 5, say, then its state, an element in the field, can be represented by 5 qubits. And the operations, multiplication and addition in the field, actually have a very nice structure. Addition, for example, can be done transversally. So C0 can be done transversally, bitwise, so qubit-wise. And multiplication, Fourier transform require more elaborate work, but still it has a very nice structure, and you can apply the fact that it's a linear, that multiplication is a linear operator, and we use various tricks like for those who are familiar with finite fields, you use the trace over a field to transform from elements in the field to scalars. But leaving that aside, we can solve this and replace the circuits on large field elements by circuits on qubits, which are not too large. And unfortunately, when we plug it into the threshold using p equals 2, we get again the eta equals 10 to the minus 4. So this gives a nice derivation of 10 to the minus 4. But note that if we actually, we don't have to use fields with p equals 2. If we use fields with p equals 2, if equals 3 or 5 or 7, we can actually do much better. Because in order to get quite high m, quite high, I mean, where m is going to be quite large enough for the exponential drop to start working, you only need to take 3 trits, for example. So instead of 5 qubits, if you work with 3 trits, you get much smaller circuits. And then the threshold becomes something like 1 over 4,000. And if you allow yourself to work with slightly higher dimensions, like 5, the threshold becomes 1 over 2,500 and or 1 over 1,500. So this is just to say that if at some point, so this is a message for the experimentalist, if at some point, say, a quantum computer that uses 5 state systems instead of the qubits falls on your head, so a quantum Pentium, you don't have to throw it away. It might be very beneficial. So let me conclude with this. We've derived 10 to the minus 4 in quite a simple way. We showed that the limit, the actual limit for a concatenated method is something around 1 over 200. So I think this is the more important step. And I urge you to try different codes which will avoid this overhead that we have because of polynomial codes. And I also want to make a remark about the possibility of the fact that using quantum trits or quantum quints might enable much better thresholds. Thanks. So in this case, there is no syndrome. So in the you mean for the polynomial codes or for the? So in these calculations, we assume that classical computation is for free, and that's sort of a regular that's sort of the standard assumption. But no, you do it. No, you do it exactly like you do for the first level. You just calculate the error for the polynomial, and then you concatenate it. So you do it in a hierarchical level. You start with the lower level, and you climb up. So you just need to repeat this calculation 3 times, or whatever number of levels you're using. I think it might. So, for example, the fact that the threshold for trits is 1 over 4,000, which is an improvement of, I don't know, a factor of 2, 3, is you have to compare it to the difficulty in implementing the Fourier transform on a trit. I don't know how much more difficult it is, but my point is that it might be worthwhile just investigating it. I don't think this has been investigated enough to say that this is definitely not worthwhile.
There is sort of a hidden scale.
Definitely, yeah, of course. This is, of course, it doesn't mean anything to move to working over particles with 13 states or 25 states and so on, because this is just impractical. Though the threshold will, of course, go to 1 over 200 or something like that. Because everything was linear. No, in the degree reduction circuit, we're using teleportation. So. Yeah, but the measurement is fitwise. It's all. No. No, no, you don't repeat it. You just apply this transversally. So everything is linear. So basically, this is the point. In this new scheme that collects all possible tricks from everywhere that we could think of, it boils down to the fact that everything is linear except for the classical computation, which basically takes all the nonlinear factors or. It is linear in M as long as we can do classical computation for free. So the quantum sort of complexity of this fault tolerance is linear. Yeah, and that's why we expect much better thresholds. So the 1 over 200 came from being optimistic, very optimistic. It comes from this. So it comes from the fact that you need the expected number of errors, 37 eta, times m to be less than t. So if you're using t over m of around 1 over 5 or 1 over 6 or whatever, you get something of this order.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.